Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I think there is a lot of evidence of civilizations that we've never even heard of in Antarctica. I think it's most likely that there are ruins that are very difficult to reach. Perhaps they're underground. Perhaps they're beneath large sheets of ice that makes it very slow going. I also firmly believe that the Nazis did manage to establish a base there, Neuschwabenland. I think perhaps it's true that they did have their most advanced technology there, as they said they did. They said they essentially built Hitler an Agartha of sorts and shuttled all of their most valuable information and technology to Antarctica. They also said that they had a tunnel from South America to Antarctica.
Hello, citizen. This content creator discusses controversial topics. To properly engage in this content, an open mind is required. There's something very strange about this man. The words he says, the things he does. Is he perhaps a glitch in the system? Is he a rogue federal agent? Is he actually alive? Is he a lunatic, unhinged and on the loose? Can anyone even stop him? He is one of the internet's most mysterious men of mystery. He is a man who has seen his own death and lives life on the run. Surviving out of spite and because he's not superstitious, but he is a little stitious. I'm proud to introduce your G-host, Jonathan Jigsaw.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the 21CD podcast. As always, I am your ghost, John. If this is your first time here, welcome. We hope you stay for a while. If you like dystopian discussions, conspiracy theories, cryptids, biblical analysis, the hunt for lost times and manipulations in our timeline and lost civilizations, then this just might be the place for you. So drop us a sub, a like, and a share. Give me your hype points and your five-star ratings. All of that helps the show grow. If you want a chance to be on the show, you can hit me up at 21cdstudios.com. There's also merch and a reading list up there. Okay? All right. Without further ado, let's get into this. I think there is a lot of evidence of civilizations that we've never even heard of in Antarctica. I think it's most likely that there are ruins that are very difficult to reach. Perhaps they're underground. Perhaps they're beneath large sheets of ice that makes it very slow going. I also firmly believe that the Nazis did manage to establish a base there, Neuschwabenland. I think perhaps it's true that they did have their most advanced technology there, as they said they did. They said they essentially built Hitler an Agartha of sorts and shuttled all of their most valuable information and technology to Antarctica. They also said that they had a tunnel from South America to Antarctica. We see from the maps that there's a lot of ability to get inland Antarctica from the ocean, if you know the routes. So submarines that knew these underwater channels and routes could easily get into the deeper realms. And it was these submarine units that were down here while Germany was waging war with the world, doing weird activities in Antarctica. And even now, I think that whatever they have down there is incredibly important, in the same way that the United Nations was considered incredibly important at one point. Up until recently, the UN were considered, you know, humanity's last hope, essentially. Humanity's key to not destroying itself in a war, because the United Nations would always be there to sort of intervene and all that kind of stuff. And the only other time that there is such a global alliance is when it comes to Antarctica. When you really think about it, if your country is at war with another country, what stops you from engaging in war in the most remote locations on the planet where maybe some of the most top secret stuff is? Antarctica. Like, I'm sorry, but what stops the Russians from just popping over to one of these other Antarctic bases and taking it over? If Antarctica really is one of these places where normal people can't go without a chauffeur, without permission, without massive investment, and even then they can only see a small portion of the land, they can't go wherever they want to, they can't see whatever they want to, they are very limited when it comes to how they communicate with other locations on the Earth while they are in Antarctica, they can't take these pictures, they can't fly over it. When you think about that, it's only natural to ask why it's so secretive. There are probably two things going on in Antarctica. One is that the Nazis did actually establish a base there and probably did have a massive amount of high tech there and plans just for the world, like they had plans for other things. And that's why, sorry if I just spit all over my microphone, and that's why half of the scientists that the US had post-war came from Nazi Germany. The United States kind of absorbed them and therefore their tech and their secrets. And I think that a lot of those secrets and a lot of that technology was in Antarctica, and a bunch of it still is. And so when they were brought down there to investigate, and when Admiral Byrd went and did his Operation High Jump there, something happened. And ever since then, the United States has been essentially farming this technology, sort of excavating archaeological sites, perhaps, learning how to understand all this and building upon the knowledge that they have. And I think that they share some of that information with other parts of the world as well. You've got a bunch of different nations down there. I don't know if this is indicating that what was or is found down there is more intense than one nation can handle on its own. I don't really know what it's all about. It could just be innocent. It could be all of these countries down here just chipping away at the ice and doing little scientific studies. Maybe that's all it is, and that's why all of the countries in the world have, you know, agreed to just forget that they are warring nations and forget that they are, they have their own interests. Maybe there's even an active civilization that is still down there. And these countries are essentially ambassadors. These are diplomats. These are sort of embassies, if you will, on Antarctica. But there's a different civilization actively there that is a little bit more powerful than the rest of the world. And they're trying to figure out why, or they're trying to figure out how to keep this, you know, southern country. Perhaps we are trying to continue to understand and learn from this civilization. Perhaps we're monitoring them. Perhaps we're learning from them. Perhaps they are Nephilim and they are secretly running the planet from there. It's really hard to say. It's impossible to say. And if you ask them, they're just boring into ice and they're just looking at the minerals. And, you know, there's nothing to see here. It's just snow and ice and minerals and once in a while a penguin. But that doesn't really seem to warrant global alliances and commitments not to build certain things and do certain things and all this kind of stuff. And when you look at a lot of the investigations into Antarctica, the expeditions into Antarctica, they don't really line up with what people say they see in Antarctica.
I must say that Admiral Byrd, our guest tonight, is not only our greatest living explorer, but he's been an inspiration to countless Americans. Admiral Byrd, you've been to both the North Pole and the South Pole. Is there any unexplored land left on this earth that might appeal to adventurous young Americans?
Yes, there is. And not up around the North Pole, because it's getting crowded up there now, because they find out it's really usable, not only to live in, but militarily. But strangely enough, there's left in the world today an area as big as the United States that's never been seen by a human being. And that's beyond the pole on the other side of the South Pole from Middle America. And I think it's quite astonishing that there should be an area as big as that unexplored.
That's a tremendous challenge.
So there's a lot of adventure left down at the bottom of the world.
Well, Admiral, do you hope to see that?
I do.
Admiral, an expedition to which I believe you're the advisor is now en route. What is that expedition doing?
Well, that's the icebreaker Etka, and it's a reconnaissance expedition. It's going down to the South Pole area to make certain observations and to look for some bases. They will be back in April, and they will report back. And upon the information we get from that undertaking, we will base the bigger expedition that's to follow. I tell you one reason they're interested. It's by far the most valuable, important place left in the world for science. That's why the scientific groups all over the nation are really interested. But more important than that, it has to do with the future of the nation, those to come after us, or even during your lifetime. Because it happens to be an untouched reservoir of natural resources. And, you know, as the world shrinks with an ever-increasing acceleration, far-flung places once useless, like we thought the North Pole was, and no man's land, become very useful.
Now, was he only saying that? Because it is indeed that. It is this vast landscape filled with things to discover if you could only get to the bottom of the ice. Or was he implying that there was something like a massive part, a huge part of Antarctica that isn't frozen, that isn't under ice? One of the most striking parts of Antarctica is how it appears on maps to be much older than it is. Like, we allegedly discovered Antarctica in 1820, but it's on maps that are predating 1820. Antarctica literally appears on maps older than its official 1820 discovery. Why is that? Well, people say it's because ancient and medieval cartographers included this massive hypothetical, this imaginary southern continent known as the Terra Australis Incognita. And this is based on philosophical, not geographical knowledge, but they believed that a vast landmass, back in these days before Antarctica was discovered, allegedly, they believed in these vast landmasses, or this vast landmass, that must be down in the south, and it was essential to balance the weight of all of the land that was in the north. And so these cartographers just drew one. Just a random continent in the south, a random landmass on the maps before anybody had actually discovered it. And the Library of Congress notes that from around the 15th century, maps began showing a southern land labeled Terra Australis or Terra Australis Incognita. And then as real exploration pushed further south, that phantom continent concept started to fall apart, because there appeared to actually be something down there. And so they would slowly, little by little, draw the portions of this southern landmass that they would see. The British Library shows that about 1690, mapmakers were leaving the pole, like the South Pole, blank. And then after James Cook's 1772 to 1775 voyage failed to find a vast temperate southern continent, these maps began replacing the old imagined land with labels like the Ice Sea. So, in other words, the old maps were recording a theory, not a discovery. That's how they try to explain that. And people who aren't ready to accept that answer will look at maps like the Piri Reis map of 1513 or the Piri Reis map of 1513. And this was a genuine Ottoman map compiled from all of these older source charts, and it is absolutely an important historical artifact. And the claim is that part of its southern section shows Antarctica centuries before Antarctica's actual discovery. The problem is that the writing on the map itself doesn't seem to indicate that this southern continent, Antarctica, is cold at all or icy. As a matter of fact, these notes on the map describe the southern land as hot and ruined and inhabited by gigantic snakes. And that description doesn't really fit Antarctica at all. So unless something happened between the 1500s and now that turned Antarctica icy, they might have been talking about something else on this map. And the historians of cartography, of course, have generally concluded that the southern portion of this map is just a distorted rendering of South America, could be. And then we've got the Orontius Phineus map of 1531. This is also often used in these arguments because it shows that there's a large southern landmass that, at a glance, can look actually surprisingly similar to Antarctica. But again, the context kind of matters because early modern geographers just believed that there was this gigantic landmass down there. The whole world would have to come to the understanding that, oh yeah, there is something down there simply because there must be, because there is stuff up here. There must be something down there heavy enough to counteract the weight of all of the stuff that we got going on up here. So everybody just agreed to start drawing all these maps with Antarctica on it. A lot of these maps showing Antarctica without ice cover. This is very interesting.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot of the modern Antarctica conspiracy theories come from Charles Hapgood's 1965 book of Maps of the Ancient Sea Kings. And in this book, Hapgood argued that ancient maps preserved knowledge of an ice-free Antarctica, and they therefore point to this advanced prehistoric civilization. That idea, of course, became hugely influential in alternative history circles, like the one that you're in right now. So while Hapgood's work was influential and highly imaginative, people don't generally accept it as strong evidence that map makers before 1820 even knew about Antarctica. So you've got all these map makers, you've got all these people writing about these books, or writing these books about maps and explorations specifically to these regions. And they're just all in on it. They're just all like, this is what we're told to believe. We're told to believe that the dinosaurs existed millions upon millions upon millions of years ago, even though nobody was there to prove it. None of the technology can actually prove it. And we're also told that we were just making shit up on these maps for most of the time that humanity has spent on Earth. We're just making it up because we wanted to. No real reason, no real scientific reason. Philosophically, we wanted there to be something there, so we just started drawing it on maps. And everybody who wrote about it all the way up until these days, even them, they're just kind of feeding into the conspiracy theory because we didn't actually know anything was there. Because, you know, sometimes it doesn't look quite right, and sometimes this, sometimes that. It never looks quite right. You know, the maps just never really do look quite right. People don't talk about that enough, how the maps just don't look right. How do we not have a way to actually make the maps look right? It's 2026, people. But beginning in the late 18th century, sealing ships, these ships that would harvest seals, they begin to push farther and farther south in search of these fur seals. Ships operated across these sub-Antarctic islands and into the southern waters in very large numbers, and captains had strong incentives to hide where they had been and what they had found, because a newly discovered sealing ground could be destroyed very quickly if anybody learned about it. And that means an enormous amount of geographic knowledge existed essentially informally in logbooks and on maps that were hand-drawn, and within secret trade networks. Explorers in the earlier days did not always want people to know what they had found. That's just the fact of the matter, especially if there was large profit to be had there, because it was very competitive, and it's still pretty competitive, I think. But when you understand that context, it helps explain why several nations reached the Antarctic mainland around the same time in 1820. But it wasn't necessarily because they had all suddenly unlocked a mystery, all these people who found Antarctica. It was because decades of sealing had pushed these ships further south as animal populations closer to known areas were depleted. But then Operation High Jump happened in 1946, and that's where stuff just starts getting kind of dicey. Stuff just starts getting kind of weird. The operation is described as this sort of secret mission related to hidden Nazi bases, ruins of some advanced civilization or something that is extraordinary, that is underneath the ice. But in reality, they try to tell us that the documented records point much more strongly toward military and geopolitical motives. And if you look at the documentation that is put forth by the unit, by the military units that were involved in Operation High Jump, you do see that they have a very professional, they have a very militarily minded collection of documents that don't talk about destroying Nazi bases. They don't talk about finding civilizations or anything like that. They don't really say what they were doing. They have all these descriptions for what they did, but they don't really seem to establish a good foundation for why they're doing everything they're doing, at least in my perspective. They had an entire aircraft carrier naval unit out there. Thousands upon thousands of soldiers and aircraft and ships and land machines and all of this kind of stuff. It was obvious that the United States was trying to see if there was anything on Antarctica that they had to get off of Antarctica before they began to establish Antarctica as a place that would be of high strategic value, I think. Just from the outside looking in, what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a military force sent in to clear the way for what is to come. And there had been all of these rumors of Nazi bases, insane Nazi bases in Antarctica. And so Operation High Jump was a very strong force sent to see what could possibly be down there. And if there was anything that would draw them into conflict, they would be able to handle it. One thing that's interesting is that Admiral Byrd found his entrance to the Middle Earth, or the Inner Earth, sorry. Maybe it's Middle Earth, who knows. But he found this entrance to the Inner Earth in the North Pole, in the Arctic, not in the South, in the Antarctic, which is what we're talking about, which is where this giant creepy pyramid is allegedly from. He found his entrance to the North Pole, or to the Inner Earth at the North Pole. So that's kind of interesting. But people still consider Operation High Jump to be a military failure because it was supposed to last 6 to 8 months and it only lasted 2, and there were casualties that were being taken. So it's kind of strange. The whole thing is really kind of ambiguous. But not long after all that happened, the Antarctic Treaty of 1959 came into play. And this is also often treated as suspicious because so many countries agreed to it. And they say that there had already been all of these tensions and sort of armed military posturing in Antarctic regions. And so in that setting, they made a treaty that functioned as a way to freeze all of these territorial disputes to prevent any further militarization and reduce the risk of conflict on the continent. And that doesn't really mean that governments were being fully transparent about every motive they had, but it does mean that the treaty kind of had a clear political explanation that doesn't really require a hidden lost world beneath the ice. And yet I still prefer to believe in the hidden world beneath the ice because there's hidden worlds in every other part of this planet. And so why would there not be on this massive landmass in the South? But if you have all of this information, you have, you know, the information coming from the Russians about how Admiral Byrd encountered some kind of force. You have the information coming from the Russians about how the Nazis did have some kind of underground or under some kind of base on Antarctica, and it appeared that they were able to go in these river channels, these channels that are cut deep into the Antarctic landmass underneath the ice, and they are able to go and surface in lakes that are underneath the ice and establish bases on the shores within this you can think of this basically this realm that is underneath a new, a different type of firmament, an ice firmament. And this firmament, this ice firmament, would protect whoever is within this realm from the Antarctic conditions outside. It would have a sort of a more temperate environment for people to build and live in. And it would be completely safe from the outside world and completely hidden. In the late 30s, two research expeditions were arranged. This happened just before the war was due to start. In January 1939, two catapult-controlled airplanes, the Passat and the Boreas, took off from the deck of the Schwabenland. They began patrolling Queen Maud Land. In 3 weeks, Luftwaffe pilots with metal pennons marked with swastikas managed to secure for the Third Reich territory the size of Germany. It was called New Schwabia. This unusual mission then passed to the Führer's Sea Wolves, the U-boats, commanded by Admiral Karl Dönitz. In secrecy, German U-boats set course to the Earth's end, the icy Antarctic shores. Later, Karl Dönitz let slip a strange phrase, "My submariners have found a true paradise on Earth." In 1943, at the peak of the war with Russia, Grand Admiral Dönitz uttered another, no less mysterious phrase. "The German submarine fleet is proud. At the other end of the world, we've made an impregnable citadel for our Führer." Back then, the Grand Admiral of the German naval fleet's words were only understood by a very small circle of insiders. Today, we can only hypothesize what the Grand Admiral meant. Recently, huge underground lakes were found a kilometer deep under the ice. The lake's temperature is 18 degrees Celsius. Located above the water's surface are dome-like vaults filled with warm air. It's possible that from these heated lakes, a constant river of warm water flows into the ocean. For thousands of years, these warm rivers may have formed large underground ice tunnels, perfect for the construction of secret bases. From the ocean's edge, any submarine could easily pass under the coastal ice into the tunnels. Here it was, a completed base, immune from storms and polar cold, totally hidden from outsiders and out of the enemy's reach. The Watchers, which we talk about a lot on this show, they're this rebellious order of heavenly beings. They descend to Earth and they corrupt mankind and they father the Nephilim. We talk about this a lot. We're going to be talking about it a lot more soon. But they're this race of giant hybrid offspring whose violence and their sort of unnatural existence, they bring judgment upon the world, they corrupt humanity, they destroy our way of life, and they have essentially hijacked the sciences as given to Adam by God, the abilities that God would have had to instruct Adam on, so that he could properly claim dominion over the earth and know how to build and what to eat and how to farm and all this kind of stuff. These are all things that God probably would have had to teach to Adam. Needless to say, knowledge given directly to somebody from God on how to take dominion over the earth is probably pretty powerful stuff. And so it's my belief that the Nephilim kind of hijacked that from the human race, from the line of Adam, when they began to imprison and eat us, okay? Anyway, all of this causes a massive amount of judgment to fall upon the world, including the flood. And these fallen beings, these fallen angels who descended, the Watchers, they're not immediately destroyed, but they're bound. They're imprisoned, and they are reserved for a later reckoning. And some conspiracy theorists argue that Antarctica may actually preserve one of the last great prisons of the old world. It could be a mountain, it could be a cavern system, or some kind of subglacial chamber that is beneath the ice where these beings or remnants of their work were or are confined. Some of the Nephilim themselves or the relics of their civilization may remain in a state of preservation beneath the Antarctic ice sheet. Antarctica can kind of be thought of as this place, not where there's no reason to go because there's nothing we can do there. It might be that way. Obviously, not all of it is that way. So, but a lot of it is, sure. But maybe it shouldn't be thought of as just this dead wilderness. It should be thought of as essentially a library, an archive of maybe pre-flood technology and whatnot, information that the everyday man is just not supposed to come across. And so the safest place for it is somewhere that literally nobody can get accidentally. There's an ice wall. There's sheer cliffs, there's icebergs, it's scary, the water is very deep and very cold. This is a perfect place to hide stuff where you don't want anybody to go and you don't want anybody messing with your stuff. It's also weird how Buzz Aldrin back in 2016 got really afraid after he visited Antarctica. And after his journey, he uploaded a picture. From everything I've seen, he uploaded like a picture of the Dark Pyramid, or this one, and he said something like, "We are all in danger," and that what lay there was evil itself. I don't know what that means. He later deleted the upload. I don't know what he was trying to say. A lot of people said that in it, you know, he's losing his mind. Obviously, Buzz Aldrin was one of the guys who went to the moon, so he's been to outer space allegedly, but he's really concerned about what's going on in Antarctica. Also, why is he even in Antarctica? Maybe just exploring's in his blood, but he was like an old man at this point, stuff like that. He was already like struggling. And while I was just looking around on the internet for weird stuff that has happened in Antarctica, I came across this really bizarre article on a website that was just really janky. It was like one of those websites where somebody just makes a website themselves, and they went and like wrote their testament on this website for anybody who would ever encounter it, aka me. The article goes like this: "Time has been a somewhat intractable problem in science. There is no agreement even on the nature of time itself, although experiments have been made to quote-unquote travel to different time periods. The discovery of a time anomaly in the Antarctic, reported in Pravda, dates back to 1996. Nevertheless, I find it highly interesting that such a discovery was made and that we have heard little or nothing about it in the Western press. The Pravda article details not only the Antarctic discovery, but also precedents of time-related research done in Russia."
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The time anomaly is not the only unexplained discovery in the Antarctic. In April 2001, a spy satellite image apparently located a man-made structure under 2 miles of ice there. The military was less than forthcoming about this discovery, and many will remember a rather strange emergency medical evacuation during the Antarctic winter of 2001. This may be connected with a huge lake and corresponding magnetic anomaly discovered under the eastern part of the Antarctic, close to, and actually right under, the Russian Vostok base there. I looked up this medical evacuation in 2001, and apparently there was a doctor there who had like gallstones or something, and so the huge storm was coming in and all of these resources were dedicated to getting this doctor out, this surgeon, out of wherever he was in Antarctica. He was like at a base there, and so that's the— and so, like, they barely beat the storm. They flew in there. They got the doctor out. They flew out before the storm. They had to have, like, another doctor get brought in because this was the only surgeon or whatever. And it was just, like, this huge, crazy clusterfuck. And so that's what he's talking about here. But the writer of this is obviously suspicious that that's what actually happened. The Pravda article called "Time Can Be Turned Back" was written on March 1st, 2004. This is what he's talking about, the writer of this website. He says, "Time has been one of the most complicated and less studied scientific issues since ancient times. 8 years ago, American and British scientists who conducted investigations in Antarctica made a sensational discovery. U.S. physicist Marianne McLean told the researchers noticed some spinning gray fog in the sky over the pole on January 27th, which they believed to be just ordinary sandstorm. However, the gray fog did not change the form and did not move in the course of time. The researchers decided to investigate the phenomenon and launched a weather balloon with equipment cable to register the wind speed, the temperature, and the air moisture, but the weather balloon soared upward and immediately disappeared. In a little while, the researchers brought the weather balloon back to the ground with the help of a rope attached to it before, and they were extremely surprised to see that a chronometer set in the weather balloon displayed the date of January 27th, 1965, the same day 30 years earlier. The experiment was repeated several times after the researchers found out the equipment was in good repair, but each time the watch was back, it displayed the past time. The phenomenon was called the Time Gate and was reported even to the White House. Today, investigation of the unusual phenomenon is still underway. It is supposed that the Whirl Crater above the South Pole is a tunnel allowing to penetrate into other times. What is more, programs on launching people to other times have been started. The CIA and the FBI are fighting for gaining control over the project that may change the course of history. It is not clear whether the U.S. federal authorities will approve the experiment. Famous Russian scientist Nikolai Kotsirev conducted an experiment to prove that moving from the future to the past was possible. He substantiated his views with the hypothesis on instant information spreading through physical characteristics of time. Nikolai even supposed that time could execute the work and produce energy. An American physics theorist has arrived at a conclusion that time is what existed before existence of the world. Russian investigator of anomalous phenomena, philosopher, and author of numerous books, Gennady Belimov, published his article under the headline Time Machine, First Speed On. In August 2001, a new model of the time machine meant for a human was set in a remote forest in Russia's Volgograd region. When the machine even operated on car batteries and had low capacity, it still managed to change the time by 3%. The change was registered with symmetrical crystal oscillators. Vadim Chernobrov said that the people felt as if they moved to a different world entirely. They felt life here and there at the same time, as if some space was unfolding. I cannot define the unusual feelings that we experienced at such moments, he said. And Gennady Belimov says the Russian president was not informed of the experiment. However, he tells that already under Stalin, there was a research institute of the parallel world. In 1952, head of the Soviet secret police organization, Lavrenty Beria, initiated a case against researchers participating in the experiments, as a result of which 18 professors were executed by shooting and 59 candidates and doctors of physical sciences were sent to camps. The institute recommenced its activity under Khrushchev, but an experimental stand with 8 leading researchers disappeared in 1961, and buildings close to the one where experiments were conducted were ruined. After that, the Communist Party, Political Bureau, and the Council of Ministers decided to suspend researchers of the institute for an uncertain period. The program was again resumed in 1987 when the institute already functioned on the territory of the Soviet Union. A tragedy occurred on August 30, 1989. An extremely strong explosion sounded at the institute's branch office at the Anzhou Islands. The explosion destroyed not only the experimental module of 780 tons, but also the archipelago itself that covered the area of 2 square kilometers. According to one of the versions of the tragedy, the module with 3 experimenters collided with a large object, probably an asteroid, in the parallel world or heading toward the parallel world. Having lost its propulsion system, the module probably remained in the parallel world. The last record made in the framework of the experiment and kept at the Institute archives says, "We are dying, but keep on conducting the experiment. It is very dark here. We see all objects become double. Our hands and legs are transparent. We can see veins and bones through the skin. The oxygen supply will be enough for 43 hours. The life support system is seriously damaged. Our best regards to the families and friends." Then the transmission suddenly dropped. So the Russians, they're essentially conducting time travel experiments. If this is to be believed, listen, I know that this stuff is crazy and me saying it on the internet is also crazy. Yeah, so you've got 60 years that we have just been experimenting with time travel because of something that we have seen in Antarctica above the South Pole. At least Russia is. So if we've been working on this for 60 years, there's no denying that some progress has been made. The Russians were very active and have been very active in Antarctica for quite some time now. Documents obtained by the Soviets at the close of World War II recently surfaced, which shows a 1944 map of the Third Reich detailing not only the direct passageway used by German U-boats to access some sort of subterranean domain, but also a complete map of both hemispheres of the inner realm of Agartha, which is the mythical name of the inhabited subterranean world. The Russians allegedly have documentation that the Nazis went inside beneath Antarctica and found Agartha and mapped it. They explored it. Explorers and archaeologists went inside Antarctica through these submarine tunnels, found a lake somewhere, popped up, and realized that they were in some sort of weird utopia, some sort of strange land beyond. One of the intriguing details here is that there are underwater passageways that run nearly the entire length of the continent, and that actually seem to converge at the exact location identified as the opening into the deep inner or subterranean earth. So it technically is possible. And right here, if you're on YouTube or Spotify, you can literally see a translation of the top secret instructions and specific detailed directions that were left for the Nazi U-boat captains to follow in order to reach the inner world kingdom of Agartha, allegedly. But this is crazy, right? This is alleged, but crazy. And then, like we said before, right after the World War, you've got Admiral Byrd with his, you know, his 4,700 men, his latest military hardware, including aircraft carriers and submarines and helicopters and even tanks, going down to Antarctica. Perhaps because the Russians tipped them off. What was he looking for with such a substantial military force in, of all places, Antarctica? There are all kinds of strong indications now suggesting that he was sent to smoke out Hitler's last stronghold there. But a lot of people believe, as I kind of hinted at before, that Operation High Jump ended in failure and some kind of defeat in under 8 weeks, which is far short of the 6 to 8 months that was intended. I wasn't able to find heavy casualties. I was able to find casualties. But he did also then make an unofficial comment to the South American press where he stated that he was attacked by enemy aircraft that could fly from pole to pole at incredible speed. And so, subsequently, the modern UFO phenomenon sprang up in 1947, and that's when, you know, U.S. disc development programs were kind of initiated that have continued on to the present day. You know, the Black Project aircraft that are operated by the CIA and the NSA, who knows really. But the story of the Third Reich's advanced technology programs doesn't really end with the collapse of the Third Reich itself. We all know this. We took a bunch of their scientists. A bunch of their scientists escaped. A bunch of their scientists went who knows where. A bunch of them, maybe, according to this story, were shuttled to Antarctica, where they may have continued developing of this craft. And then you've got the secret space program whistleblower, Corey Good, who says that preparations have been underway since 2002 to publicly announce the discovery of a flash-frozen civilization in Antarctica. Good's startling claim has received support from internet data mining expert Cliff High, who in a January 2017 report refers to an economic boom caused by an Antarctica announcement in the next year or so. Obviously, that didn't happen, but it doesn't mean it's not going to in the future. Personally, I do believe that Antarctica will be a massive disclosure topic in the near future. I think they're going to find something in Antarctica and they're going to use it to shift the narrative in some way. I really strongly believe there's no way that we just forget this whole part of the planet. There's no way that this doesn't become something, in my opinion. But it leads to this interesting possibility that Donald Trump, he could authorize some sort of major announcement about an Antarctica discovery in order to perhaps rejuvenate America's manufacturing industry. There's supposed to be a lot of minerals and stuff down there. He could use Antarctica or something about Antarctica to ramp up his economy a little bit. He could use some sort of discovery to usher in some kind of new age of technology. He could use an Antarctica discovery to...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Release some kind of disease or cure for something. Who knows? Maybe even to reveal aliens, right? Like, there's any number of things that you can pull out of Antarctica, because Antarctica is essentially just a goodie bag of randomness. The normal person has no idea what is going on down there. And where it seems like even the people who are down there don't really know what is going on down there, but the powers know. The powers know. But on December 11th in 2016, Corey Good said that he had learned about a major excavation underway in Antarctica of a flash-frozen civilization that was technologically highly advanced and involved some sort of extraterrestrial life. He said that since 2002, teams of scientists and archaeologists have been excavating the ruins, which are buried under 2 miles of ice. So once again, we're hearing about this base buried under 2 miles of ice. Critically, in early January 2017, Good says that he was taken to Antarctica to see the ruins for himself by an inner Earth civilization that he calls the Anshar. Good said that bodies and artifacts that are extraterrestrial in origin were being removed and replaced by terrestrial objects from warehouses secretly located elsewhere around the planet. The goal appears to be one of both sanitizing the area of any extraterrestrial evidence while seeding artifacts that steer scientific analysis toward a desired agenda. AKA, the Nephilim are here. We gotta make sure the Nephilim stay hidden, or we gotta find all the Nephilim from the rest of the parts of the world and bring them here to Antarctica. One of the two. And at the same time, we need to cover up what we're doing, put down false footprints, and steer all of this toward a desired goal, a desired outcome. Circumstantial support for Good's claim of a major Antarctica discovery being excavated comes from a series of recent VIP visitors to Antarctica. This, of course, took place in 2016, and the list includes then U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, Apollo astronaut Buzz Aldrin, Russian Orthodox Church Patriarch Kirill, and Australia's Governor General Sir Peter Cosgrove. But a bunch of other presidents have also gone here too, like Obama, I'm pretty sure Clinton. A lot of people believe that Lovecraft was connected in some way to the mysteries of the universe or whatever. But he talks about Antarctica too in his story At the Mountains of Madness. H.P. Lovecraft turns Antarctica into something far more unsettling than just this remote continent. He kind of treats it as a, like we said before, a sealed vault of forbidden memories and knowledge, a place where the world has hidden its oldest and most unbearable truths. And this is kind of what makes his version of Antarctica so effective in his stories. It's not just frightening because it's cold or it's empty or we don't know what's there, it's difficult to survive. It's frightening because it feels like the one place on Earth where something ancient could actually easily remain buried or just walking around. Antarctica becomes the end of human confidence. The expedition arrives with the language of science and exploration, and the men don't discover strange fossils or unusual formations only. They also find evidence of a world that existed before humanity in any meaningful sense, a world populated by the elder things, as Lovecraft calls them, these beings with intelligence and culture and architecture and history. And that revelation in the story changes everything, just as it would in real life if there were actually Nephilim or Watchers there. Antarctica stops being just this blank space on the map, and it becomes this graveyard of erased civilization and past. And I think what gives the story its power is the scale of what lies hidden there, because in our mind, I feel like we make these things smaller. The Nephilim, the Watchers, the Angels, even God. I feel like we make them much smaller than they are. But Lovecraft offers an alternative, deep history of the planet that sometimes I feel like is more aligned with what God is and what the spirit realm is. It's beyond the mountains. And beyond the mountains, in At the Mountains of Madness, the explorers find a ruined city so vast and so ancient that it seems to literally mock all human notions of antiquity and this concept that we knew what was going on back then. And in that moment in the story, Antarctica becomes a much more unsettling place. It becomes a challenge to the entire human story. And I think that Lovecraft is not just suggesting that mankind has been ignorant, but that mankind is too late. They had their chance to right these wrongs and they didn't. In at least in Lovecraft's book, they're no longer the central actors of Earth's drama. They are these newcomers, kind of stepping into ruins that are left behind by powers so old that civilization itself has begun to feel temporary, like we're phasing in and out, like the powers that be now on Earth would allow us to believe. But it's interesting when we compare the fact that there was an Earth here before there was a man here. God made everything before he made man, including the hosts of heaven. And so you would have, it would appear, some kind of form of Lovecraftian style in those older days where you have the spirit realm sort of doing their thing on the planet before the humans came. In the end, what At the Mountains of Madness says about Antarctica is both simple but also extremely relevant, in my opinion. It is the one place on Earth where the buried past can still wait intact for the wrong people to find it. Thanks for listening, everybody. The life is in the blood.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.